Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and with me today is...
Knockreiner. Corey Knockreiner. Where's my martini?
Corey's already thinking about drinking, and it's only 2 o'clock on a Thursday.
Today, what James Bond does.
It's a fair point.
International spy and playboy.
You are just a CTO. God. You are a CTO and not a spy star, though, unfortunately. Sorry.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
In today's episode,
how do you know that?
That's a good point. For all I know, yeah, valid point. In today's episode, we are going to recap our 2018 security predictions. Each year, we put out predictions on what we think the major trends or events are going to be in the world of the cyber. And once
for instance, the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah, that is a, wow, strong prediction. And then each year, before we release our new predictions, we always have a recap of how we did last year. We'll go through and grade them with the, I think we decided on the win, meh, lose scale.
Yeah, it was like a, win, meh, fail.
I guess we'll just figure out our scale along the way. And with that, let's just dive in. On today's episode of the podcast, we are in predictions mode right now. Our 2019 security predictions are going to come out this week, if you're listening to this episode when it comes out. And while they're actually in the bag right now for ours, we want to hear what you guys think might be some security predictions for this upcoming year.
Yeah, tell us the scary stuff that's going to happen on the interwebs.
So if you think you know what we're expecting to see in the upcoming year in terms of threats or trends, you can tweet at us at hashtag WatchGuardPredicts. But each year before we release our security predictions, we always do a recap of last year's predictions as well. And we kind of give them a...
What's the point? We're always right, right? Better than Nostradamus.
Believe it or not, we're not. So for this episode, we're going to walk through last year's predictions for 2018 and give each of them a rating, whether it was a hit, a miss, or a meh.
Should we do what we used to do, like a win, a meh, or a fail?
Yeah, let's do that. Win, meh, fail. That's our grading system. And we had, what, 7 predictions in total for last year? And for time's sake, let's just go ahead and jump right in.
Yeah.
And the first prediction I figure we can cover was one of mine from last year. And it was that a major flaw in a cryptocurrency would cause its value to crash entirely.
Yeah, cryptocurrencies were blowing up back when you made this prediction. Lots of high value, but just thousands. I mean, people think Bitcoin, Ethereum, and some of the major ones, but there's thousands of cryptocurrencies that were blowing up on the market back then.
Yeah, this would have been like November, December timeframe, and that's right around when Bitcoin hit $20,000 a coin.
Yep.
And I mean, to start out the prediction, so my rating for this is meh. We hit on each half kind of separately, I think. So first, cryptocurrencies in whole crashed.
Yeah, they toppled. I think that was more a bubble that some people alluded to more than an actual hack. Although there were hack-worthy events that did make cryptocurrency go up and down. Crash is a strong word, though.
Well, I mean, it turns out that, you know, Bitcoin with a $15 transaction fee and a 3-hour transaction time probably isn't worth $20,000 a coin. It's still, what, like 6,000, which is...
It's still a ton of
money. But, but outside of that, we did see a few cryptocurrencies, none of like the really big ones, but a few like top 20, top 50 ones actually experienced vulnerabilities that caused some serious issues in them.
And to be clear, by the way, some of our audience gave us credit for this before we even, a lot of, you said vulnerabilities. We were specifically thinking a flaw in the cryptocurrency itself, but there were tons and tons of wallet hacks that happened really after we made the prediction, but still in 2017, technically. Mm-hmm. So our audience was giving us credit for this when we didn't even think credit was due.
Yeah, there were numerous wallet attacks. Tons of attacks against cryptocurrency exchanges where you can trade one for the other or cash out for money. There were a ton in like Japanese, I think there were 3 or 4 different Japanese-based cryptocurrency exchanges that were hit reportedly from North Korea in attempts to steal money. But there were still a few vulnerabilities in cryptocurrency, like specific cryptocurrency technologies. One of them is Verge.
That's
what you might have heard of.
Yeah.
Where there was a flaw that basically enabled an attacker, a guy, to execute something called a 51% attack, where through this flaw, he was able to gain a majority of the computation power on the blockchain, which basically means he gets to decide what goes on the blockchain and what is the correct blockchain. And the reason this is a serious issue is that it opens up a problem called double spend, where the whole point of cryptocurrencies is that you shouldn't be able to spend the same value twice. This is why it's not just like a file on your computer, because you could copy the file and now you have two crypto files. Instead, it's more of a ledger where it just keeps track of financial records. And through the distributed validation of this ledger, all the nodes on the network confirm that any given value that someone tries to spend hasn't already been spent. But when you control a majority of the hashing power on the network, you can spend some cryptocurrencies, so let's say buy a pizza, and at the same time maintain a second copy of the blockchain that says you didn't buy the pizza, and then a week later or whenever that transaction finally clears and you get your pizza, you change over to the blockchain where you didn't purchase your pizza, and now that is the correct blockchain, and you can re-spend your money while still eating your pizza. It's a pretty serious issue, and it actually caused a hard fork in Verge where they had to fix the vulnerability.
You should mention a hard fork, by the way. That's something, if blockchain is to work properly, you should almost never hard fork. So yeah. Hard fork is a big decision by
hard fork is basically when the blockchain, when the it's members of the blockchain decide that they don't like something on it. I mean, some of them are scheduled.
They agree to rewrite history.
They agree to basically rewrite history.
And the right way.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
It's still used in some cases, like Ethereum. Whenever a new major feature comes out, they hard fork the blockchain. And they actually include things like the difficulty bombs and something called the Ice Age, where they intentionally set something that will break the blockchain if they don't hard fork by a certain period of time to force them to...
So that's kind of a maintenance. That's different than some of the classic hard forks.
So they use it as a way to force innovation and force them to make changes on the blockchain. Whereas in this case, it was a reactionary move where he basically broke the integrity of the blockchain through this attack. So they had to hard fork in order to fix the vulnerability. Verge went down for a little bit after that. It is still around.
Price fell 14.6%, I think. Which is sizable. They were kind of it was a decent crash. Granted, they were always a low value. They're not the most super popular cryptocurrency.
This is one where it's like a couple
in
bucks
the
20s, a coin.
Yeah. Are they in the 20s?
Instead of like, you know, 6,000 for Bitcoin. Yeah. But either way, I call that a meh. What are your thoughts?
I'm with you on a meh. The Verge was the same solid example that I would have used because it had a clear. We won on bug. I would say this is a win on the trends. If you've heard us do predictions before, we always mention that the predictions are a fun way of us putting kind of our finger in the air to see what will happen, but we sometimes overstate things just to make it sound good. But there's trends behind this. And I think your thoughts around this was cryptocurrency has value. It's blowing up. There's lots of them. There's lots of attack surface potential with some of the new cryptocurrencies. So as far as pure trends of hitting on, yes, there's vulnerabilities in some of these new blockchains. Yes, cyber criminals have been targeting in many different ways because it makes them money. So I think it's a clear win as far as the trend, but for the hit, it's kind of a meh hit because I think you said a top or a popular cryptocurrency, and that's the only, I think you kind of toppled the value for a little while, but whether or not Verge is a top, it's within the top 20, I think, at the time this happened, but it was really kind of a smaller one.
How many of you folks listening have heard of Verge before 10 minutes
not
ago?
Not the digital magazine.
Yes.
But I still think it was a great prediction. I think blockchain is something we should watch. I think cryptocurrencies, we definitely have seen cryptocurrency miners go up throughout the year. So as far as a cyber criminal target, cryptocurrency is definitely something to pay attention to.
Yeah, let's just add blockchain to everything now too.
Isn't that what all the investors are investing in?
Investing in blockchain
technology? IBM's doing something blockchain. I'm probably way behind because I haven't brought blockchain to our security.
Man.
It fixes everything.
We got to make sure we get all the buzzwords.
Yes.
So let's move on to our next prediction. And this one revolves around Wi-Fi, but really more so on other wireless protocols out there. So for this prediction, we predicted that tools like software-defined radios that let you work with non-Wi-Fi wireless protocols like Bluetooth or Zigbee and Sigfox and those different ones that aren't quote-unquote Wi-Fi. These software-defined radios make it easier for both attackers and researchers to look for flaws in them.
They've it's come kind down of commoditized the hacking of non-Wi-Fi signals. Wi-Fi hacking is pretty easy for everybody that's been in security. Software-defined radio used to be harder.
Yep.
Now it's easier to get to.
And so we predicted that there would be more attacks against these non-Wi-Fi wireless protocols. And for this one, I'm calling it a hit. We saw, it was just a few months ago, a win. Oh, man. Whatever our grading, we get an A minus. How's that?
A minus sounds good. I'd take that. My parents wouldn't switch me. I'm kidding.
That would end up on the fridge finally.
Finally. What are you suggesting, Mark?
I assume you were much like me and you focused on things other than your grades growing up, but I could be wrong. But it was just last September, I think, when we saw Blueborn.
Yes.
An attack against Bluetooth wireless networks.
Oh, we talked about it here, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. And actually, we just had another one. What was it, last week with...
We called it Blue Bit. It was...
Bleeding Bit. Yes.
Yeah, so multiple.
Yeah, so we've had a few targeting Bluetooth, and that kind of makes sense. Bluetooth is being used more and more with just IoT devices, smaller devices.
We joked about the Bluetooth standard has been evolving, and BLE, or Bluetooth Low Energy, is essentially Bluetooth version 4, I think. Mm-hmm. So, yes, a lot of common usage for Bluetooth, so it seems like definitely the second one that would be targeted after Wi-Fi. I can't remember any of them, but I do remember some Zigbee, some other hacks that were on other stuff too. I think this is a solid win just with what we called Blue Bit and with Blueborn alone. So either way, it's a win. But I think we saw a ton of increased security research, mostly from the good guys, not necessarily the bad guys, in non-Wi-Fi wireless. And definitely when we went to DEF CON in Black Hat, there was a lot of software-defined radios and a lot of talks about other wireless connectivity.
I went to
was police cams, by the way. They used different Wi-Fi. Yeah, the wearable police cams that used wireless, but it wasn't necessarily Wi-Fi to sometimes share their files.
Interesting. And yeah, I can't imagine this is going to stop anytime soon.
No.
Because we are adding more and more non-Wi-Fi wireless protocols to...
If we were too tired to add new predictions, we could have just copy and pasted this one for the next few years, I think.
Yeah, especially with some of the protocols like Zigbee, which have historically been closed source, proprietary, where they wouldn't even release the spec sheet. They are moving more towards open source, or at least allowing audits, which means we are going to find more flaws, which is good because that means we get to fix them too.
And I also think home automation, a lot of these weird wireless protocols are showing up in more and more consumer products and home automation. So I would say home automation will be a big source of security research in the next few years.
Yeah. So our next...
Pat on the back, man.
Hooray. Good job, team. What does that make us? 1.5 for 2?
There we go.
Our next prediction that we had involved adoption of corporate cyber insurance. Where this one was
actually
a real fun one, right?
So this one was, some part was adoption. We were claiming the increase in adoption of cyber insurance would fuel ransomware growth. And I think this is, for me, where we get the clear miss. So really, clearly ransomware has been a big thing since 2013 through 2018. Cyber insurance and cyber extortion insurance specifically has been picking up in a large part due to ransomware and things like the WannaCry attack. So the thought was, you know, if I'm a bad guy that's having trouble finding people that are paying for ransomware anymore because a lot of them are starting to back up, but I want to target people that might shell out for it, I could go to cyber insurers, hack their network, figure out who has extortion insurance, and there's a good chance that they have extortion insurance to cover their butt from lack of backup or something, so maybe they will pay out. So to me, the growth part in cyber insurance, that part's a clear win, but that wasn't really the prediction. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're seeing a lot of people go to cyber insurance. I think Who is it? Orbis Research said the CAGR for it, the compound annual growth rate.
Oh, yeah,
is around,
the CAGR.
Yeah, CAGR, everyone knows that, right? Mm-hmm. Compound annual growth rate for the cyber insurance industry is, you know, 25.4% through 2023. The market reached $17.5 billion in 2017 and continues to grow every year.
You keep making this prediction more and more exciting.
Yeah. Hey. Businesses do have to worry about cyber insurance. SMBs, by the way, are also buying cyber insurance, according to Cyber Policy, 69% increase over the past quarter, and the highest quarter growth this year was 150%. So clearly, companies are using cyber insurance to kind of deflect some of the damage from things like ransomware, but we clearly have no proof of any attacker targeting a cyber insurance company to find better victims.
Yep.
It's definitely a possibility.
Especially in the future, because yeah. Ransomware does seem to be moving more towards a
targeted attack
now, instead of just the blanket stuff we used to see.
And that's one other thing, by the way. One clear thing we did see in 2017 was ransomware plateaued. I mean, it kind of, as far as pure volume, it kind of hit a limit this year. Its extortion amounts went up, and as you say, it started targeting specific organizations. Damages went up, but it's getting more picky. You know, I mean, really, the bad guys are not getting as much success with opportunistic attacks, so they're trying to find targets that definitely will pay and will pay a lot when they get attacked.
Yeah.
So this is probably just a miss, because I don't think they're using the strategy of finding victims through insurers.
I say that's fair, too. So that makes us 1.5 for 3 now. So 50%, that's just slightly below passing.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe we can pick it up
almost
with the next
one. We're almost as good as a coin flip.
Exactly. So our next prediction revolved around IoT. And with this, we predicted that there would be another massive IoT botnet or IoT attack that triggered security regulations. And while there weren't any really massive attacks from IoT...
Well, there were a lot of... I don't sell yourself
botnets,
short.
But not like
continued
huge.
Botnet evolution from Mirai, but yeah. Nothing big and headline-grabbing as far as a dying DDoS.
Right. We did see what I would call not insignificant regulation passed in California.
Oh, there was a law. Yep. No, I'm with you. I think technically this is an absolute hit.
Mm-hmm.
California passed their first IoT regulation to force some security capabilities of any consumer device. I think it was around September of this year that they kind of, you know, passed that.
Yep.
I do notice it doesn't really go into effect until January 2020, but that's I still think it hits as far as a law.
We predicted it would get signed, not it would go into effect. So
yeah, it doesn't have to.
Can't
actually
take my pat on the back away from me.
No, you can have it. I will say there's the reason I give it kind of a light hit is on the federal perspective. I think you're right, by the way. We had a conversation and with ourselves. California, when things get passed in certain states, they do start to filter. I think that California was one of the first states that did the mandatory data breach disclosure
yeah.
act. So, you know, while there's nothing federal for IoT yet, you know, this could be the start of a chain of events.
In California, they're what, the 6th or 7th highest GDP if you were to consider them
yeah,
a country
yeah.
in the world.
And even population-wise,
so
they're
they
freaking
they have
huge.
A requirement for something sold in their state, it's something that's going to bleed
affect
over.
A lot
it's
of
like
folks.
The de facto yeah. standard at that point.
Yeah. But do know there is actually, and this was even before our prediction, in 2017, some congressmen did the Internet of Things Cybersecurity Improvement Act of 2017. That was introduced to Congress a long time ago. It had just been introduced, which means they read it in front of Congress and kind of proposed it to be considered. That did not move at all. There's been no update. They haven't reread it. They haven't voted on
it. Let's be real, though. Not yeah. a whole lot has moved since then.
That's very true. But from a federal level, it hasn't moved as much as it should.
Yep.
But either way, I do think this is a clear technical win because of California. A law
yeah.
was passed. And there's been definitely a lot of talk from many other countries as well. Mm-hmm. GDPR has been, you know, moving discussion for other cyber legislation, and IoT comes up with every country.
And some of the stuff in the bill is actually kind of interesting. Some folks argue that it's a little too vague and doesn't have enough teeth, but basically they require that any device manufactured after it takes effect in 2020, if it connects directly or indirectly to the internet, it must have, quote, reasonable security features designed to prevent unauthorized access, modification, or information disclosure.
Yep.
So even if that is a little vague, it does at least at this point require some attention to security, which up until now, there have been no requirements. And I mean, there hasn't really been any consumer drive either. So they've been kind of forgotten. Yep. And the other really interesting bit that I think will be very effective and useful, specifically because of things like Mirai, is that it now requires every single device to have a unique password or require the user to change the password when they first connect.
Yeah, so no more hard-coded backdoors.
Because that was exactly how the Mirai botnet spread.
Default passwords.
Like 68 username and passwords, yeah. Default crappy
ones. At least Mirai was just default. The other thing we saw repeatedly at Black Hat was hard-coded. When I call them a backdoor, this wasn't a user-configurable password. It was some sort of hidden support or maintenance account that had a... And I assumed this law would cover that as well. You know, that would be a non-unique password.
Yep. So I'll call this one a win.
Absolutely.
Puts us at 2.5 or 4 now.
There we go.
I think
Moving on up.
Yeah, that's what? Just still just barely passing
or something?
Yeah, I don't think it's 75%. Corey got a 2.5 or 4 in math.
66%. I don't know.
Well, we still have some chances to make up that. So prediction number 5 involved Linux and also really revolved around IoT as well. And our prediction was that Linux attacks would double throughout the years from what we saw before. And this one is a bit of a mixed bag, I think.
Yeah, I mean, externally, I won't talk about our data, which I think you'll cover, but externally, we can't see much data that shares whether Linux attacks have increased. We have seen a lot of data around IoT botnets and Linux-based DDoS attacks increasing. A lot of botnets nowadays are IoT devices which are embedded Linux specifically. And I did find a number of stories suggesting that, you know, things DDoSing tend to be Linux systems and those are increasing. But as far as clear indicators that, you know, the threats have doubled, we're hard to find there. But we have our own data, so why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, if you've followed our internet security reports or our threat dashboard on Secplicity, you know we track the top 10 or beyond that different threats that we see from our firewalls deployed throughout the world. And there's really been three main Linux-based threats that are kind of generic catch-alls for a whole lot of Linux malware we see out there. One called Linux Flutter, one called Linux Downloader, and one called Linux Exploit. And these are three signature sets that catch a huge amount of Linux malware or malware.
Sometimes they might be
devices.
One threat that's blowing up. Other times they could catch a wealth of different types of threats.
We saw, I think, quarter one of them was almost exclusively dropping
a crypto miner.
So when it came to these three main signature sets that we looked at, one of them, Linux Flutter, was actually down 78% year over year.
So it was down.
It was down and pretty significantly down too. And that was one that primarily goes after botnets that cause denial of service attacks. The other two, though, were up quite substantially. Linux Exploit went up 185% from the year before. So that's doubled.
Yep.
And then Linux Downloader went up 257% over
more
the year.
Than doubled.
So
we'd have to actually look at the volume number to compare whether or not the two that doubled make up for the one that went down.
Yep.
But we haven't gone that far yet. But I think there's some suggestion that Linux attacks are up there.
Yep. Whether it's past the threshold of actually doubling or not, I don't know. But they are at least still rising. And I can't imagine they're going to go down anytime soon, considering just how many IoT devices are going out there in the wild.
And by the way, Linux Flutter going down just happens to mean that the standalone Linux Flutter script went down. Doesn't necessarily mean that the Mirai Flutter that's on a Linux system, I don't know if that signature would catch that one.
Yep. So still something that I think we need to keep an eye
on. That one probably might be a win. It could be a meh.
I'll give ourselves another half a point. So we're 3 for 5 now.
There we go.
Which is solidly just above passing.
There we go.
That's what, like a D minus? All right. Let's see if we can raise our grade a little bit more. The next one involves multi-factor authentication, where you want to introduce this one? I believe it was one of yours.
Yeah, this one was more a business one, basically saying that 2018 would be the year of multi-factor authentication, specifically for SMBs. As you know, passwords have had a bad name for quite a while, endless data breaches. Operating system providers like Microsoft are moving to their concept of Windows Hello, which is really all about making new ways to authenticate facial recognition and touch, you know, using your fingerprint, much more prevalent. Prevalent.
Prevalent. Corey has the best words.
The bestest words ever. So way more prevalent. 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 Maybe I can say it right eventually.
Stable genius.
You stop it. I told you. Make fun of me all you want. Just don't use like.
Don't you use my words against me?
Don't you use words for him against me. So anyways, MFA has definitely taken off. There's actually tons and tons of stuff you can look at as far as markets to see the growth of multi-factor among many different enterprises. The compound annual growth rate, again, that's CAGR of MFA, is 15%. So it's definitely growing. I could not find anything to support or to deny whether or not SMB specifically is using it more. I can say we launched a SMB multi-factor authentication product this year, and it's been growing quite a bit, so that's good news.
There we go.
Yeah, but I don't think, I can't confirm or deny this. I put this as a meh. I don't know if meh is 50% for us, but I don't find any clear wins. I also don't think there's indicator that it is not true. I guess the thing is the year of suggests there would be a boom in this. Mm-hmm. I did not see a boom. So I'll leave it up to you if you think it's a meh or fail.
I'll go ahead and say inconclusive, and it's been stricken from the test.
What?
So, since we can't confirm or deny, can't award any points, and if we don't know the real answer to it, shouldn't count against us in our grade. At least that's what I tried to argue with some of my professors back in school.
Wow, so. Good job.
And then I guess we can go on to our final prediction now. And this one was very fitting. We're actually recording this podcast just a few days after the midterms. But this prediction was that misinformation and propaganda from cyber criminals and state-sponsored hackers or attackers would play a much larger role in this election season than actual hacking of voting infrastructure and machines. And I will call this a strong win.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes. As of right now, we don't have any evidence that there was any actual hacking of voting machines or voter data. I mean, there were obviously still security concerns all along the way with either of them, but no quantifiable proof.
And by the way, to be fair, there has been like newscasts talking about people claiming that their vote flipped randomly in places like Texas, I think. But nothing has really come back to election machine hacking. That said, there has been clear evidence that nation states are still, you know, there's still some fake news going on that's trying to change people's public opinion or at least polarize people one way or the other.
Yeah, we still definitely saw a lot of that. It was almost like every single week there was another article of Twitter or Facebook removing tens of thousands of bot accounts that were trying to spread misinformation. And that's not going away anytime soon either.
This is one we could probably
keep throughout the next decade.
Yeah, 2 years later, I'm sure we'll be talking about it again.
It is still a very effective method for modifying public opinion and sowing discord.
Yeah. And one thing we might not have looked at closely is there's been elections in other parts of the world. Like Brazil had a pretty big one. There was definitely a lot of propaganda, cyber propaganda going on there as well. So, no, I think we had a clear hit on this. Again, I think you're right saying that we still need to monitor the security of the actual machines, but it does seem like propaganda is the strategy of choice right now.
All right. So there we go. I think that puts us at 3 out of 6. With one
taken
off the
test. If you throw one away.
Or we'd say 3.5 out of 7.
Yeah.
What does that give us for our grade?
Three out of six is 50%. So yeah. 3.5 out of 7, about the same.
All right, cool.
Exactly the same.
We'll take it.
So pretty much, we could have flipped a coin.
Thanks again for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any predictions for this year's upcoming security events, you can tweet them at us at #WatchGuardPredicts. If you have any questions or topics for future episodes, you can also tweet at me at @XORRO_ or Corey at @SecAdept or the both of us at #The443Podcast.
Ooh,
woohoo! Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.